Picking up the plates and cleaning up after Thanksgiving, along with the Apple model and the Apple mystique. Hey, this is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the physical, the spiritual, the emotional, and just about everything in between. This is episode number 495 of The Next Step, and we're inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our 10th year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life. Since 2008, these next steps have been taken toward and for the disenfranchised members of the church community, as well as for those searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, as well as for the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Thanksgiving is over. Who cleaned up the mess? Who picked up the dishes? Who washed the dishes? Who got the place back to normal? How are you doing? I hope you're doing well. And welcome to this episode of The Next Step. You'll have to forgive me if I don't start off by talking about homosexuality. I may later on in the show, but I'm kind of like all washed out. Last few days have been very exciting and trying. Got people that are writing things and people saying stuff. I did a fantastic interview. I have to admit it myself, okay? I have to admit that it was a great, great interview. It was on KPFK. And I will have a link on today's show notes. Do listen to that interview. It was great with a dear friend, Armen Abelian, from Equality Armenia, and we shared in a conversation with the host, Harrison, and it was actually very moving because we did this interview in front of the house where Aldous Huxley wrote things like Brave New World. I stumbled on this place. Actually, that's the place where we had this interview just a few days ago, and I stumbled on it because there's no markings. There's no markings on the house. Like, you know, when there's historic monuments, historic homes, you would see at least a little plaque that says that this is where Aldous Huxley was. I remember a few years ago visiting London, and my friend took me to the coffee shop where Marx and Engels sat, and they wrote out the Communist Manifesto. And when you go into that coffee shop, there's a plaque up there on the wall that tells you that this is where the Communist Manifesto, this is where Karl Marx, Frederick Engels sat, and on these chairs, and there's something about that, you know, there's like this present when you realize human history was really moved by these people. In the same way with Aldous Huxley, one of my heroes, hero in the sense that Brave New World was really my first exposure to Huxley back in high school. Is I joined the play production group, the drama group, which I owe a lot to. There was a teacher there, Gerald Weinsberg. Owe a lot to him. And actually, I got a chance to see him before his passing. One day, I was traveling on a flight, and I ran into him in an airport, and he asked me how I was doing, and I had to, of course, remind him who I was, and then he remembered, he asked what I'm doing, and I told him I'm a priest, and he big smile on his face, and I said, and I think of you every time I get up to give a sermon, because he taught me so much about speaking, about articulating, about projecting, about movements. And so in that class, the first exposure I had to a play where I was a part of it was Brave New World. It was a fascinating. I was a drone or something. I forgot what I was. Something that resembled a drone. One of the background guys that just kind of like walked in the mob. This is Aldous Huxley, you know, George Orwell, 1984. These were impressionable times too as a young man. So we were at this house where the likes of Orwell, where the likes of Huxley hung out and wrote and thought. And there we conducted an interview. And I thought it was a very good interview. And I want you to listen to it because I expounded on what our stance is as an Armenian church, as an Armenian Christian. And I use those two words emphatically. It's not just Christian. It's not just Armenian. It's a combination of Armenian Christianity. So do listen to that. But then, unfortunately, after we did that interview, it got misconstrued. Somebody wrote about it and in a different way. And unfortunately, names were used and got to be a bigger issue than it should have been. And bottom line is we've been dealing with it for the last couple of days. So I hope you don't mind. I'm not going to get to that today. Probably get to it in the next few weeks. Because today I wanted to start off by doing a little house cleaning after Thanksgiving. House cleaning in the sense that, okay, we ate the meals, now what? If you remember last week, we talked about Thanksgiving. Theoretically, spiritually, the philosophy behind Thanksgiving, the opportunity to give thanks and how it rises us from our humanity to our godliness, to our divinity. And that's what the next step is about, you know? That's what we always try to do. It's to realize that we are human and we have our shortcomings. And we have an opportunity to rise to the occasion, whatever that occasion may be, whatever the world brings. And so I was very, very excited because Thanksgiving for us was a very special one this year. We were able to get meals out to the homeless through our efforts, through our previous parishes. We counted how many people are now serving the poor. And this is, again, remarkable in the sense that these are Armenian Christians continuing that mission and doing that. In other words, yes, we were at one point starving Armenians. Today we have an opportunity to feed, take that starving and change it around and feed others. Why not take care of it in the best way that we can and make a true statement to the world? Not about, hey, woe is us, but hey, look at us. And we have, and we're ready to share. So a lot of stuff has been going on, and I know the world is like filled up with all kinds of news coming out about different improprieties and about sexual advances, a lot of stuff. But it's important to remember the good stuff that's happening, the good things that are coming out. And in fact, after this article came out about me and the aftermath of that interview, it was interesting because I was called out on it. And it's interesting. You start thinking, okay, 40 years you've been serving in the church and you've put everything out there. And I wrote a piece, which should be out there tonight or tomorrow. And one of the priests turns to me and he said, "Are you going to sign your name to it?" I said, "Absolutely. I've always signed my name to it." I mean, think about it. We always put it out there. We put it out on the internet. Freely we receive, freely we give. And you're listening to this because we put our name on it, right? So when you look at Thanksgiving and all the things that happened, all the feeding that we did, Thanksgiving morning we got up with the family and we went out for a walk at Los Angeles. It's called the Turkey Trot, of all things. And we were called to walk the 5K walk. 5 kilometers, what is that? 3.1 miles, I believe. Yes, 3.1 miles, which is really good for me because that's my usual walk in the mornings. I try to do about 3 miles in the morning. And it was a very nice walk, especially because we were with family and walking. But the intention of it was to bring awareness to the homeless population in Los Angeles, a large, large problem right now. And we walked, we raised funds, and we raised awareness. But at the end of it was interesting. We were walking to our cars, and throughout downtown Los Angeles, there's encampments of the homeless. Small little tents, sometimes proper tents, you know, the kind that you find at the sporting goods store, and sometimes just cardboard shacks. People have makeshift tents that people have created to give them shelter from the elements. And as we were walking to our car, people in their car, I mean, I'm not talking about one, two, I'm talking about a line of people, line of cars, were stopping by each of these tents giving out Thanksgiving meals. And I thought, how beautiful. In fact, at one point I was moved to tears when I saw this, people getting out, knocking on the tent and saying, anybody home? If somebody's home, here's a meal for you. And yeah, I know it's maybe once a year. It's maybe a holiday that gives them the opportunity to do this. But what's wrong with that? Yeah, well, I wish it could be every day, but here's an opportunity every day to be able to do this. And so it was beautiful that this expression of Thanksgiving was being celebrated by people who knew what the right thing to do was. You know, that's the bottom line. You know what the right thing to do is, right? And so you do it. And I look at all the number of meals that were served through our In His Shoes ministry over the course of that Thanksgiving. And when you expand it to what we do on a regular basis, you realize that, yes, we have a lot to be thankful for. And it's beautiful that we are thanking, that we are doing. And I hear from all of you. So many letters we received during Thanksgiving, people saying in different communities where you keep doing the right thing. And God bless you all because, yeah, okay, maybe it takes a Thanksgiving celebration or a holiday to get out there. But you know what might happen is you might think about it on another day. And there are people who do that, right? And you start doing it at other times. There's a beautiful quote by John Lennon who says, and I think of it as a Black Friday quote. If you don't know what Black Friday is, I know we're all over the world, so let me give a quick explanation. So the day after Thanksgiving is traditionally called Black Friday. And on that day, the prices on items, on merchandise, is completely discounted. Or at least it used to be. And people would buy things that they didn't even need. In fact, we still do that. I went with my kids late Thanksgiving night. I guess it would be Black Friday morning. I guess 12, 1 in the morning. And we went to a Best Buy, big box area over here. And just lines and lines and lines of people going in. And when you got in there, yeah, there's these giant television sets. There's computers marked down and stacked up like boxes and people taking them and people paying for them. And wow, what a boost to the economy that is for things that we don't need. You know, you think about it. You know, you got a computer, it's working. And do you need the latest? Well, you need it because you say you need it. And there's the temptation of materialism coming in, right? Well, hold on to that thought because I'm going to get to it in a few moments. So, Black Friday gave way to what's called Cyber Monday. And I guess that's more universal, international, right? Because as we saw several years ago, the big stores, the retail outlets became second to the online markets, especially with Amazon. I think this year it broke its records, and Bezos became the world's richest man sometime in October. But on Thanksgiving, because of the stocks of Amazon, he exceeded $100 billion. $100 billion. Yeah. So all this is a prelude, right, to this quote that I wanted to share with you. It's a John Lennon quote. And it's very appropriate for Black Friday, but it's appropriate all the time. It's like, if people demanded peace instead of another television set, there'd be peace. That's John Lennon. If people demanded peace instead of another television set, there'd be peace. How appropriate, huh? What's it take to get peace? What's it take to do the good? What's it take to feed the hungry? You want to do it, do it. If people put their mind to it, if we get people together to think about the things that are important, those important things happen. Okay, so all this is happening and people are buying, people that don't need it, but they buy it, and more and more and more. So we went through all of this. And really thank God that we had this opportunity to give, to share with others. And Sunday, I wanted to go to church. It was one of the Sundays that I wasn't assigned anywhere. So I had a chance to go to St. Gregory, my former parish, from about 15 years ago. And I went there to celebrate the Divine Liturgy, and there was a guest clergyman there. So I participated in the Divine Liturgy. It was beautiful. The singing was beautiful. It was really an opportunity to close your eyes for a few moments and really to escape the reality of Black Friday and Cyber Monday in that sequence. But here's what happened. It was interesting because the Bible selection for that day was the lectionary reading for that day is the story of the rich fool. Now, last week I talked about it as a prelude to the Thanksgiving event. The story of the rich fool. If you know what? I'd like you to listen to last week's if you didn't get a chance to hear it, okay? The story of the rich fool. It is so important of a story that Jesus tells. So important because it really sets up what our commission is as people living in this world. And he talks about this man who had riches and he had even more riches. And instead of giving, instead of sharing those riches, what he did is he built bigger barns, bigger storage areas. And so like $99 billion was not enough. We have to make $100 billion. And, you know, as I shared with you last week, there's not much you can do after a few million except to make more money, right? Because the way the tax structure is and the way people do, you know, you got some money, you got to invest it, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, depending on how you use that money. And you got a lot of zeros behind the one, and you say it's 1 million, becomes 1 billion, it becomes 100 billion, and so on and so on. And this story is so appropriate for the times. Talks about this man who was a fool because he counted on those material objects. And that night his life was taken from him. And Jesus says, for whom were all those things good for? That man was a fool because he's put his trust in those material goods. And unfortunately, we were at the church and the good part was during the announcements, we heard that they were going to be doing toy collection for a group called Popok. And I mean, you got to know how excited I got when I heard that, because this was something that 20 years ago we started at that church. 20 years ago, there was a group called Popok. It was, I can't even remember what the acronym stands for. The word Popok itself means wish, but in Armenian. But the acronym, I think, stands for Pasadena Armenian Police Advisory Council, if I'm not mistaken. So it's the different Armenian organizations that would be an advisory group to the police department. And the year that I was there, I remember I said that, you know, this doesn't make sense if we're not doing something. Again, putting the action with our words. And we started a toy drive during Christmas season. And that toy drive, I was so excited to hear that 20 years later, it's still continuing. And they're still collecting and providing these toys for needy children in the area. That was really a beautiful, beautiful thing that happened in church. But when it came to the sermon of the rich fool, I was just kind of like waiting for it, waiting for this beautiful sermon, and it wasn't there. The priest didn't give it. He went on rambling about something else. Even went a little bit too far in saying some things that weren't even part of our tradition, but nobody cares. You know, if he talked about homosexuality, he would have been called on it, out on it, but it's okay if you talk about ungodliness as long as you don't bring up the taboo subjects, right? Anyway, the reason why I was so disappointed was at the end of the service. I was there with my wife and my son and my sons, and we said, let's get going because, you know, it's Sunday and we want to get moving. And we're kind of walking out of the church when I see an elderly gentleman. I hadn't seen him in a good 15 years or something. I remembered him. I greeted him. I said, hi. And he's now in the Armenian old age home and comes out for Sunday services. And he was talking to a friend of his. And I overheard this brief conversation. And he said, yeah, I have this big house. And I don't know what to do with it because he's in a home. I thought, wow, Wow. The story of the day was not presented. Would that have made a difference? I'll ask you. Would that have made a difference? It was exactly the story of the rich fool. Here was a man who says, I have this huge house. I don't know what to do with it. Isn't that what the rich man said in the story, right? I've got so much wealth, I don't know what to do with it. I think I'll build bigger barns to store it. I have a house, so I think I'll just keep it up on the block. Instead of saying, like, what good can I do with it? Would it have made a difference if he had heard the story? I don't know. I just know that it was an opportunity that was passed by. It was an opportunity that was lost, an opportunity to share the gospel. And this is why it's so important that we take ourselves seriously in the work of the church. You know, this past couple weeks now, we've been hearing about all these different allegations and big celebrities, newscasters, politicians who've been called out for sexual harassment and everything. Do you remember what I shared with you a few years ago about the laugh track? People thought that I was just innocently annoyed. But that laugh track that we hear in shows, if you watch sitcoms, it's ever present in the sitcoms, right? Somebody does something and then everybody laughs. And this past week, they had a marathon of All in the Family. It's a show that I like. I particularly cared for Norman Lear, All in the Family. And it was an episode where Archie, the main character, opens up a bar and he's having a terrific day. It's the Super Bowl game and he's making money and they are robbed. And the robbers come in with guns and say, okay, give us all your money. And it's treated as a joke. Then because the robbers at the end said, okay, everybody drop your pants. Everybody drops their pants, and of course the audience. I didn't understand where the humor was in this. But we are told to laugh by the laugh tracks, right? They put in laugh tracks. Now, I know All in the Family is filmed before a live studio audience. I know. But you get the idea. When we talk about some of these other things, you know, all these years, you ever watch that show One and a Half Men or Two and a Half Men or anything? It's all about things like this. And what do? Laugh track. Laugh track. And so now people are getting called on it. Well, we've been desensitized to it. And we were talking the other day, you know, we're looking for a place. You know, this is one of the beautiful things that I found in Armenia a few years ago. It was like midnight and we're walking in Armenia and there's kids playing out on the street. This was during the summer. I thought to myself, wow. I mean, I'm talking about right in the square. There's kids and there's no parents like hovering about them. They're in close proximity, but they're not hovering around them, you know, like we would today here in America, you know, for fear that they might be kidnapped, for fear that they might be shot. And I think, like, could it be that laugh track? Could it be that we have just desensitized ourselves to what is really ugly? And so we just kind of accept it. It's a thought that I throw out there to you. It's a thought because it's annoying. It's a thought because it's difficult for us to understand what is going on. Why all these things? We've desensitized ourselves and now we're catching it. We're saying, okay, what we were doing, maybe it wasn't funny. Maybe it wasn't funny. And you know what? It's just a vicious circle because who are you going to complain to? Who are you going to talk to? It's really up to you. It's up to us. For us to understand who we are, what we do in this world. So many times people want other people, and this is my biggest complaint about politics. We look to other people for other people to solve our situations. Now take control of it yourself. understand the situation you're in. Take some time to really think it out. Give yourself some decent time to think about those things. And understand that, you know, the solution is in your hands. The solution is an opportunity for us to be talking about these things without fear and without condemnation, and knowing that in talking about them, we at least take the first step to begin a conversation, a dialogue, and hopefully we can grow by that. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world, but this is where we start off today. In the second portion, I'm going to talk about, well, luxury church. Yeah, along that line too, okay? Right now we're going to take a break. We always play a song of the day. I hope you enjoy this one. The one I selected for you. Thank you. That was Pavane by Gabriel Fauré. Beautiful rendition offered to us, arranged by Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull. This is off of the Jethro Tull Christmas album. I thought it's a nice way to get us into the Christmas spirit. We are in the Christmas season, right? We are getting close to the Christmas feast and celebration. And it's not just one celebration on that day, but as I've shared with you always, keep Christmas alive all year long. And why not today, especially because it's getting to be winter. Sorry, folks down under. Yeah, I know it's summer over there. In fact, I just saw Father Maracchia yesterday from Argentina, South America. We were talking about, oh, it's summer over there. Yes. Over here, it's cold. It's getting cold. And Pavane, what a beautiful song to put us in the Christmas season. I hope you enjoyed it. There'll be a link on today's show notes to that song, as well as the entire Jethro Tull Christmas album. Highly recommended. It's a beautiful beautiful collection of Christmas carols and Christmas songs that really touch the soul, touch the heart in a very unique way. I hope you enjoyed it. I've heard that too. Yes, I've heard it too. We're just talking. There's a common understanding that when a musical group is toward the end of their existence, they put together a Christmas album, you know? The Christmas album, the surefire thing that could sell. But this is far from it. Let me just add that as an addendum to the song you heard and the entire album I just spoke about, the Christmas album by Jethro Tull. Far from being extinct, actually, they just announced their 50th anniversary coming up in 2018, their 50th anniversary tour. Ian Anderson's going to be in tour. Looking forward to seeing him at the Greek Theater here in Los Angeles coming up early next summer. So, yeah, far from that. Don't worry. No, they're still around. Anyway, the second portion of today's show, I want to talk about this luxury church idea. And this came about a couple weeks ago when we were in Cupertino. We met with a dear friend of mine, Georgiek, who we were talking about the entire Apple experience. And as I shared with you a few weeks ago, we had a chance to go to the new Apple campus, the dream of Steve Jobs. If you've had an opportunity to read Steve Jobs's autobiography, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, please, highly recommended reading. It's a beautiful book that was put together, I think, right after his death a few years ago. And it talks about the man, his dream, his vision for what he had. And you're seeing that what Apple is without Steve Jobs. It's still a very vibrant company, but still lacks that innovative drive that Steve brought to the table. And it's interesting because I've made my moves around Apple products. If you've followed me here on The Next Step, you know I've talked about this many, many times. I was in Cupertino. Our family started off in Cupertino right after we were married. We started there. And Cupertino, of course, is the headquarters of Apple Computers. And we remember when Apple Computer was just a small little venture, and they had just gotten out of their garage, and they were starting to buy property here and there and start their campuses. And I was in love with their products until you realize that the planned obsolescence of these products made it almost impossible to keep up with it if you didn't have a steady flow of income that was going to subsidize that habit of buying these outdated technologies. By that I mean, like, if you buy, like for instance, if you buy an iPhone 6, you know, it's still running, it's still top of the line, it still does everything an iPhone 7 and 8 could do. Small little things that are different, but it's basically you've bought into obsolescence, because within a couple of years, you know that they won't be backing it, they won't be supporting it, and it almost forces you to get into a 7 or an 8. And that's really one of my problems with Apple computers, but it's still, there's a lot to be said about the technology. And that's what we were talking about, that what's the mystique, the Apple mystique? And there's been so much written about this, but I want to talk about it here on The Next Step, because how do we bring that about in the church? Think about this. You know, there are smartphones galore. You can find all kinds of smartphones. In fact, the other day I looked at a Samsung 8. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful phone. Does all kinds of things. It does a lot of things that the iPhone can't do. But still, the iPhone X, for instance, that just came out, is priced almost double the price of the Samsung. It's hovering around $1,200, $1,300. Whereas the Samsung, you can get in at $800 and have a very decent, decent phone. But what is it that drives people to spend the $500, $600, $700 extra to own that iPhone? Why do people have iPhones? Why is it so popular? Why do they stand in line to get this iPhone? And it's about that Apple mystique. It's about that beautiful packaging that it comes in, that beautiful presence, the form with function. That important two words, form and function. The form is beautiful. The function is easy. And look what we can, the parallels that we could drive to our church. And why aren't we doing that? We have a beautiful, beautiful church called the Armenian Apostolic Church, the Armenian Orthodox Church. But why is it that we are not pushing the limits and really striving for that excellence? And Georgie gave me a quick example, which I had forgotten about. And interestingly enough, just last week, it happened again. But he reminded me of a time during Chavarum. This is during Holy Thursday. There's a portion at which we, during the service of Chavarum, Chavarum literally means darkness, the order of darkness. It's a reminder of what life would be without Christ. And we read the passion narratives, seven different gospels, where we trace the passion of our Lord Jesus Christ from the Last Supper to his betrayal, to his tortures, to his crucifixion. And the passion narrative reads out not only the betrayal, but the complete loss of his friends and standing there alone at the cross and being nailed to this instrument of torture. And as we go through this, one of the things that we do is we extinguish candles in the church. So that slowly, as we read through the passion narratives, not only are we reading what happened, but we are experiencing what life would be without the light of Christ. How beautiful is that? Not only do we share the story, but we actually live it. So that at the end, when Christ goes to the cross, you realize we're in darkness. And it's in that darkness that we sing the last hymns of that beautiful Chavarum night. And so my friend remembered that several years ago in Cupertino that I was just really upset, because as we were extinguishing the lights, slowly the candles were going out and we had the electric lights on a dimmer. We slowly put them out, slowly, slowly dimming them. So that by the time you read the seventh gospel, you're in complete darkness. And there in the darkness, you sing the final hymns. And it brings to mind the darkness that is all around us. The importance of Christ as the light of the world. And he reminded me that night, somebody who had taken on the responsibility of putting the lights back on just didn't get it. To him, it was a function of on, off. It was very binary, right? It was either on or off. The lights were off, and so boom, puts them back on. And I remembered that night as he was telling me, as my friend Georgie was telling me, he reminded me of the disappointment I had, because it was such a meaningful expression and service. We were left in darkness. We had a moment to contemplate. And then this guy decided, hey, we're going to turn the lights back on because, hey, we're in dark. And somebody just took it upon themselves, because he was in charge of the lights, to just fleck them on when the time had come. And it just ruined the atmosphere. It completely ruined the atmosphere. And I happened to see a similar situation just a couple weeks ago. I was in a church, and they did just about the same thing at a different portion, but it doesn't matter. It was just a reminder. I don't want to get into that right now. But it begs the question, why? Why don't we have a bit of romance in us? Why don't we have a bit of artistic understanding in us? Why can't we understand that in that darkness, wouldn't it have been beautiful if the lights slowly came on? If the lights were just as we dimmed them slowly, slowly we were brought back, so that we had a moment of contemplation rather than, okay, this is the service, we did it, now's the time for the lights to come on, boom, they're on, now get in your cars and go home. And it's the same question that I talk about, the same understanding that we have with these phones that are now in our pockets, that are basically our primary computers. The phone that you have in your pocket, that smartphone, is now your primary computer. You do just about everything on there. You not only talk and text, you can check your email, you can do your ordering, you could connect. Hey, you're even listening to this podcast if you want to, right? You're even listening to my voice. You decide that that's it. And that's your primary computer. And Apple has figured out a way that they could give you this beautiful design, the form and the function. And because they market that form and function in such a way, they're able to get top dollar. And it's very interesting that you'll never see Apple products on sale. New items, you may see a couple dollar difference between different vendors. But it's always has a stable price. It's always there. And it's always in demand. Even if you have a product from 2-3 years ago, you're sure to get a residual on it that will compensate you for, you know, your use. It's remarkable. It's something that has to be noted, and it is noted. You know, in business circles, people write books about it, people talk about it, but why aren't we talking about it in church? Why is it that when it comes to our church, we fall short? We don't give our church the due it deserves. And it's not just turning on lights, it's about every aspect of it. Here in Los Angeles area, because of the high volume of Armenians, there's also a high volume of deaths among Armenians. Natural. I'm not talking about tragic, but natural, people die, and of course there are services. So there's a number of funeral services. Here's an interesting phenomenon I'm going to tell you about. This is true. And I don't know if this works in other ethnic communities. I'm just going to talk about our ethnic community among the Armenians, but it happens. It happens invariably at every funeral that I've been to. If the funeral takes place in a church, it's okay if it starts 15 minutes late. It's okay if it starts a half an hour late. If a funeral takes place in a church, it's okay that at the end people walk out. It's okay that they take different approaches to come up and pay their condolences to the family. But if that same funeral, or if obviously not the same, but if a funeral takes place inside of a mortuary, a non-Armenian, non-church setting, the mortuary chapel, it starts exactly on time. At the most, 1 or 2, 3 minutes late. There's a respect. They're there. Right at the beginning. And at the end, someone comes up from the mortuary and says, the people in the back row, we invite you to come forward to pay your respects and to offer your condolences to the family. And one by one from the back rows, they come up in order. No pushing, no shoving, no getting out the back door, climbing out the windows. No. It's done properly. Why? Why is that? Why? It's phenomenal. It is a phenomena. And it bugs me. Why aren't we striving to do what is right? And it's in every aspect. It's the reverence that we have for the liturgy, for the Holy Eucharist. I think it was last year I shared this story with you. Susan and I were up in Seattle for church services, and I think we were there for a couple days because we ended up going to St. John's University. I believe that was in, maybe it was St. John's Chapel, I'm not sure. But it was the University, no, it was the University of Seattle we were at, and there was a chapel there. And we happened to be there at noontime, and this is a Catholic university. And we went into the chapel to say a prayer when we noticed that at noontime there was a service of adoration. And not a priest, but the student came vested in shirts and robes. They came forward with much reverence. They took the Holy Eucharist, the reserved sacrament. They took it and they placed it on the altar. And inside this church, for the next half hour, we sat. We just sat and contemplated. It was a time of meditation. It was a time of prayer. Nobody got up. Nobody came in after the event started. And what was a non-event to us was a true event for them. In other words, when it started at 12, the church filled up with people. They brought the Holy Eucharist, the presence, the body and blood of Christ. They placed it on the altar. And there, people sat in meditation, in prayer. And this took me a few minutes. I have to admit, it took me a few minutes to really understand what was going on because I kept expecting, you know, somebody to come forward and offer a prayer, somebody to come up and offer a sermon, but they didn't. It was a good half hour. We just sat there. And after a few minutes, I realized that this is it. Because there is no prayer that somebody can offer. There is no message that anybody could say that is greater than what is there. Namely, the body and blood of Christ, sitting at the altar table. You are in the presence. But that understanding takes a mature outlook. It takes a mature understanding to understand that that's what's on the table. And the operative word there is mature. A mature understanding means that you have processed what's going on. If you believe the holy divine liturgy is the means by which the bread and the wine become the actual body and blood of Christ, then you are standing, you are sitting, you are in the presence of the Savior, of God. And there's not much more you need to add to that. There isn't anything you need to add to that. And that's what we were experiencing up there. And that's what they have in the Catholic services, this mature understanding. And that takes time. It takes us to understand by education, by learning. And we have to give ourselves that time to understand, to properly approach it. We don't give ourselves that time. We want everything done and somebody else needs to do it. It goes with what we were talking about earlier. But it's the difference between getting a phone that does everything and getting an iPhone. And once again, I'll tell you, I'm not a big fan of Apple. In fact, I rejected Apple many years ago, but now I'm using an iPhone because for certain reasons. I've got to tell you, I have Android envy. I look at some of these Android models, and I know it's one of our discussions between Susie and I every so often when we compare phones and things that we could do, or I'll call and Susie's my technical assistant too, so I'll say, Susie, I can't do this on the phone, and she'll say, time for you to get an Android. Yeah, it's not about Apples and Androids, it's about understanding that that mystique, there is a reason for that mystique. Why people will spend that extra money for the iPhone. Why aren't we doing that for the church? Well, we can. And this is where it begins. It's our next step. Not next step, the show, but our physical next step. It's the next foot that you put in front of your other foot. The way you're walking. The way you're moving forward in faith. The way you're growing and the way you are maturing in faith. It's this understanding from the heart. It's not something that you can easily understand by logic, but the understanding that if God is there, what more do you need? What more needs to be said in the presence of God? Because then, once you do that, then you start understanding, divine liturgy. It doesn't make sense for me to come in halfway through. It doesn't make sense for me to come in 5 minutes before it's over because it's too long. Because actually, it can't be too long. Actually, in the presence of God, you need to say, it's too short. Think about it. The time is too short. But that mature feeling needs to come from within. It needs to come from us leaving the ego outside, leaving our cares and understandings. When you walk into a church, it's to understand that this is a sacred space where you are there with your Savior. And I know it's difficult. I know it's difficult because of so many distractions all around you. And this is why I say when you get to church, take one of the front seats, as closest to the altar that you can be, because there's less distractions. When you take that back seat, what happens? You are forced, because of your position, because of the form, where you're at, to look at all the distractions, to be distracted. But by sitting front, what happens? There's only one focus that you can have. Okay, so if the front's taken, get the next seat. And focus in on the presence. What is the divine liturgy? It is the preparation of the body and blood of Christ. It is the presentation of the body and blood of Christ. It is the body and blood of Christ coming to you. And now you have a different understanding. This is the next step that you take today. As we're getting closer to Christmas, you want this understanding because you know it's going to be Christmas before you know it. You know that there's going to be all kinds of stuff coming up, but at the center of it, you know that there has to be something more than the celebration of Christmas trees and lights and jingles and Santa Claus and so on. You know that it is the presence of the Lord in our lives. Now, I've talked a lot about taking our faith seriously, but in taking that faith seriously, it also means that we evolve and we take a mature look at our faith. How many times I've heard people come up to me and say, oh, I love coming to the Armenian church. It reminds me of my youth. Well, that's not a good thing. Because probably in your youth, when you came, it was toward the last 5 minutes. But it's to get into a church early and understand that that 1 hour that you're there, that 1 hour, 1.5 hours, is a time that you set aside. Now, how does this all fit in with what we were talking about this luxury church? Well, think about what Apple did. They created a phone that you want, that you're willing to pay more for. Why? Because the form is beautiful. It looks good. The light doesn't come on all at once. It just like slowly fades on. They're taking time to present to you something that you want. You know, logically, that you can get a better phone, but you want that phone because of what they've told you it is. Think back in the first portion of our show about the laugh tracks we were talking. They've told you this is the place you need to laugh. They've told you that this phone is a better phone. Why aren't we doing that for the church? I'm telling you that there, inside of the church, there is the presence of Christ. Now, you can fight it But this presence of Christ in the middle of our church is really the only way that you could explain the rest of it. Because out of the 168 hours that you're given every week, you call to this 1 week, 1 week of celebration, 1 hour, excuse me, out of the 168 hours, you're called to this 1 hour of celebration, where you put your cares outside and you come into this church to celebrate something very special. And now that you've heard it, consider this the Apple ad. Okay, there's going to be nobody, I'll be honest with you, there's not going to be nobody that's going to market this to you the way Apple can market it, right? It's up to us. And exactly what I said a few minutes ago, it's up to us. Don't look for other people. Do you love something so much that you're willing to give something extra to it? Yes, I am. And so I market it to you every week. I share with you this beautiful, beautiful tradition. And really, the more I think about it, it's just so hard for us to accept, for us to understand it, unless we first take that first initiative of having faith define what we're doing. And that's the operative word in this parallel I make with Apple. Faith. What? Wait. All right. Here goes. I told you, this is wild, right? There's nothing else that can explain why people will spend that extra money except faith in the product. Apple, mystique, that's the faith. People have faith. Yes, it's exactly the same thing. They know what Apple has provided, and they have faith in this beautiful form. Now, have that same faith. Jesus Christ, God incarnate, giving you life. Have faith in the life that you enjoy every single day of your life. Have faith that God is with you, that God has brought you to this moment, and he takes you into that church. And now you start looking at that church, and you say that this is the ultimate experience. I won't call it an iPhone experience because it's beyond that. If you come in there with faith, then and only then do you understand that there's nothing greater on the outside. So you've got to be there. Then and only then do you understand that what you're standing in the presence of is God. Marketing. You want marketing? I just gave it to you. It's up to us to take it, okay? I hope you did. Here's Susie. I'll be back in a few moments.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the 10th year of producing shows, which are heard around 6 continents. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, believe it or not, we are already at the verge of December, right? somewhere in the world where you're listening to this, it's probably already December 1st, and that means the new year is coming up, and we got so many things coming up this month as well as next month. If you happen to be in the LA area, we invite you December 10th. We're going to have a special children's memorial. It's a difficult one, but I know you'd want to be there because it's very spiritually uplifting, remembering our greatest loss, our children that have passed away. That's December 10th at the St. Leon Cathedral. And of course, we've got the Christmas celebrations coming up, both on the 25th and January 6th. I want you to mark on your calendar January 13th through 15th. We're having the Martin Luther King Annual Retreat by In His Shoes, and we invite you to be part of that. That'll be taking place in a town up north. It's about a four-hour drive from Los Angeles, and I'd say another four-hour down south from San Francisco. So it's somewhere in between these two cities, Santa Maria area, actually. It's at a place called Zaka Lake, and you won't want to miss that one. It's a very, very special 3 days that you'll be celebrating with us. Let's see, aside from that, there's all kinds of things happening, and I invite you to get involved with us at the usual spots. This Sunday morning, I will be at a 5K walk run in memory of Vahakan Setyan. He passed away a few years back, and his parents do this annual run with the Beverly Hills Police Department. And I do it every year. It's just the time is perfect. It's Sunday morning at 8:30 in the morning, and it gives me enough time to do the walk, the 5K, and then get in my car and get over to the Divine Liturgy. And so I invite you. You know, you don't have to end it out with a walk. You can go with us. We'll go to the church afterwards. You'll have a great day. That's this Sunday, December 3rd at 8:30 in the morning. You come to Beverly Hills. Okay, don't ever say that I didn't invite you to Beverly Hills. Here's your invitation. Join us, Beverly Hills. You won't regret it. You'll see all of us. And if you don't make it, then look us up at the usual spots. We're on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, and of course at the mothership inhisshoes.org. I want to thank you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed the show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. On behalf of the wonderful crew over here, Ken, our engineer, Susie, our producer, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off, but I'm top limit.